At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. We are digging out of the offseason, and man, do we have a fun show for you today. Getting back together with a couple of new friends, Chad and Dan, over at an Ohio State theme site, sort of named after their band, the Best Damn Pod in the Land is sort of their moniker. They're really more of a YouTube channel, but I think they're looking and getting on the podcast as well. What we're going to do today is really a part two of a conversation. We did a part one on their show, and so Best Damn Pod in the Land, if you want to look that up on YouTube, I was on their channel, and we had a really good conversation about just college football in general, certainly the transition from Saban to DeBoer, and then we talked about the three players who transferred from Alabama to Ohio State. They wanted to sort of almost get some scouting, if you will, on those players. What should Ohio State expect from those fellas? And so we had a really good conversation on that. We didn't get through all of the topics, and so we said, hey, let's do a part two, and let's do it over on the Alabama Football Podcast. And so they agreed to join, and we're going to have a fantastic conversation. We certainly hope you enjoy it. We're going to get into the transfers again. We're going to talk about it more from their perspective, what they're seeing, what they're hearing leading into a season. We're going to talk about the tremendous expansion of the Big 12, or Big 10 rather, making them more of a coast-to-coast conference. So that's going to be interesting. We talk about the playoffs a little bit, and then we talk about Ohio State expectations for the season. Is this a sort of a boom or bust, natty or bust type season for them? And we have a really good conversation around that. So participate in the conversation or join the conversation. Give us a listen, and we think you'll really, really enjoy it. Without further ado, here is the show. Well, welcome back, Alabama fans, and have we got a treat for you. We've got a part two conversation that we're hosting on the podcast here. Dan and Chad, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having us, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to return the favor.
You guys are featured on, and gosh, I guess I have to say it, but the name of your show is The Best Damn Pod in the Land. So tell us a little bit about what you guys talk about over there.
Well, I think it's important to understand why we call it The Best Damn Pod in the Land. It's a tribute to Ohio State's band, The Best Damn Band in the Land. So that's what it's referred to as. So it's not like we just crowned ourselves that we are the best pod. But Dan, I'll let you chime in on all the fun things that we talk about. But I think that, once people understand why we did what we did, it's an homage to the band. That's why the name's what it is.
Yeah, one of my favorite Buckeye memories was that I was at the 2003 Natty in Tempe, Arizona, when we beat Miami. And afterwards, Jim Trussell said, he goes, you know, we've always had the best damn band in the land, the best damn fans in the land, and now we've got the best damn team in the land. So I thought it was pretty cool that Chad came up with that. Yeah, I mean, we just kind of, you know, talk about anything and everything Ohio State football. We'll sprinkle in some national stuff if it's relevant to the Bucs. And you know, it's just a hobby of ours, and we're having some fun with it over the last few months, and it's kind of taken on a life of its own. And
yeah,
this pod world gets small real fast.
Yeah,
it really.
Yeah,
does.
We Go are ahead. Homers. We are homers, Dave. Like if you listen to our podcast, we're. I mean, especially me. I tend to be like a glass half full guy. Dan kind of keeps me honest. I think Dan does a good job of being like, well, Chad, actually. We don't have five stars at every position. So, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, we have a lot of fun with our pod.
No, that's great. I've got a pair of crimson shady glasses that that I wear when we record sometimes. So I know how it works. I understand 100%. Hey, why don't we jump in and cover some topics? You know, I want to start first, and it's maybe the other side of the coin, right? You guys hosted me, and we appreciate that. That was a great conversation. And we talked about the three Alabama players that transferred to Ohio State. Talk to us about these guys, and we'll sort of run through them in order. But talk about these guys. Let's start with Kalen Downs. What you're experiencing now that he's sort of moved on, he's out of our day-to-day sort of purview. But what are you guys seeing? What's the Ohio State fan base thinking about young Mr. Downs?
I think they're, we're super excited about him. I mean, all the reports coming out of camp is that he's just next level when it comes to his football IQ. We caught a little bit of grief from our last segment when we talked about whether or not he was, considered to be overrated. And, people don't hear everything you say after that, right? They just think you called Caleb Downs overrated. But, to our point, if he's considered the best defensive player in the nation, is he overrated? I think the, to your point last time, Dave, the potential's there. I think the expectation is there, but all reports from inside the Woody Athletic Center, Woody Hayes Athletic Center, is that he's just been, a game changer when it comes to preparation and preparedness and the mental aspect of the game. And then I think we're going to see some really special things back there with the way Jim Knowles uses his safeties. And, I think he's going to get the roam free a little bit more, kind of like a Malik Hooker did for us in the past, and really have an impact on the game back there.
Yeah, and I think one of the most telling things was how quickly he had his has integrated with the team, and how it, when you look at pictures and stuff, like he's in it, in the thick of it with them, and in talking to people in and around a program, and you guys already know this, his athletic ability, like just his ability to change directions, his speed, and then Dan talked about some of that is, because he's able to anticipate so well. And so that we're hearing all the things that you guys already know. We've had some Michigan folks dropping some videos and stuff in our mentions for sure of the playoff game, where he got, blocked and knocked over and some of this stuff, but we're as hyped as anybody else to have Caleb Downs. And I think that we haven't seen safety play like Caleb Downs is capable of, probably since Malik Hooker, Dan. And maybe Caleb might even be a notch above him in athleticism. So I'm excited for it.
So not what we were hoping for. No reports of him struggling to pick up the system. Looks like maybe he's not going to play. I mean, we love Caleb, but come on, right? Throw us a
No,
bone.
he's not re-entering the portal.
No.
Very good. Very good. Talk to us about Seth McLaughlin, the center that had a rough go at the end at Alabama, but looks like he landed on some solid ground there at Ohio State. Talk to us about McLaughlin.
Well, I think the first thing to know is that he's not returning punts, Dave. We've covered
We did cover that.
that. But Dan, I know you, so I can tag this over to Dan because I know Dan had some really good insight on Seth from some friends of ours.
Yeah, he has acclimated to the program really, really well. I think he was taken aback a little bit at how strong the brotherhood is. That term gets thrown around a lot, but these guys, this team in particular, they're really, really tight. To get the guys to come back for their senior year when they all would have been, top three draft, top three rounds of the NFL draft, tells you that it's a special group, and you don't have a that doesn't happen without a strong culture and a strong brotherhood. And this team, when they, have events outside the facility, it's not uncommon for, 40 to 50 guys just to show up within, 10, 15, 30 minutes of each other. And there's just a really strong brotherhood there. I think that was something that really stuck out to him. The difference in the strength program was interesting. Got some feedback that the Mick is really working on grip, whereas in Alabama it was more about not just grip, but the focus on grip and how important that is for guys in the trenches was really, a difference between what he was used to at Alabama. Alabama seems to be focused more on just pure power, which, has worked, but when you're in the trenches, that grip is really, really important as well. But he, all expectations are he's going to be the starting center, and he's settled in really well with everybody.
Yeah. And I'm going to say something controversial, Dan, that we know, based on, and I'll be careful how I word this, but there in some conversation, there has definitely been some blame put on Bama's quarterback for snap counts in that game. And some of the yips that happened. And I can't tell you where that information came from, but I can tell you that, there was some thought that some blame should be shared there, especially, with the cadence and the change in the cadence. Jalen Milroe?
Yeah, Jalen Milroe.
The Ohio State coaching staff alluded to that in the spring presser that, there might have been a communication issue there and that they hadn't seen any sign of it since he's been on campus is really what it boils down to.
No, I think that's fair. I think, if you go back and look at that, the Alabama-Michigan game, there was enough to go around. And so, and Seth, and I love the kid and it sort of had a passion parade on your show talking about him. Right. Mm-hmm. And I stand by every word of that. His reputation is he was probably good for one bad snap a game, mm-hmm. No big deal. But last year there were a couple of games where it was accentuated, Texas and Michigan sort of topping that list. And I think there were, I think there was enough sort of, I hesitate to say blame, because I don't like that word in this context, but I think there was enough sort of responsibility to spread around. And so Milroe, I think he would own a piece of it. And I think Seth would too. And that's fair. I our deal, right? Alabama Football Podcast, what we do, for fans, by fans, that's sort of our mantra. So as such, we don't really trade in insider information. We don't have a sort of a collection of contacts, but I have just a sliver of sourced, really good, sourced information that McLaughlin loves it and is extremely happy in Columbus. And for a guy that left our team that I really enjoyed and appreciate and root for, I'm glad that he's happy. So that's good for, I think that's good for everyone. Talk about, and this is sort of the wild card, almost like sort of the throw-in player in the trade. Mm-hmm. We think there's a lot of potential. You guys think there's a lot of potential. I don't know that anyone knows a whole lot about him, but quarterback Julian Sain, what are you guys hearing and seeing in Columbus?
So I can tell you, and Dan, I hope you don't mind if I steal this one, because I've been on this for a while, that I have talked to some folks, and Dan and I do know some folks in and around the program, and we'll just be honest about it, we do, that Julian Sain throws the most catchable ball of any of the quarterbacks in the room. And we know that, Dan, I'm not, it's not just unknown. We've talked about it on our program. So that, and Julian Sain lost his black stripe quicker than most, I would say, quarterbacks ever, after, I believe, 8 spring practices. And he is, however, in my opinion, he needs to thicken up. He's small, but he sees the field well. And he throws a great ball. And I know that in talking to some of the folks that people just seem to like him. He's a nice kid. And Dan, I'll tag you in there.
Yeah. So we got some actually feedback from our buddy Juck of the Juck on Buck show. He was at the Woody Hayes as part of the 1870 Society, which is one of our collectives. Had some folks come in and get to spend a few hours with the staff and the team and things like that. And he indicated that he was taken aback at how much bigger Julian looked than the reports were coming out of the camp. So they feel like, the strength program that he's been on since he got into campus in what, January now, has really made a difference. And that's not uncommon. You know, you see a pretty big jump when these guys first get on campus, and then, you know, you'll see another big jump before, you know, in between that freshman and that sophomore year. But I mean, you know, expectations are high. They're Ryan said something during the spring presser that was blown completely out of proportion. And, you know, everybody thought he said Julian was competing for the starting job, and that's just simply not the case. But, you know, next year the expectations are is that he's the guy, which is going to be interesting because we have – I mean, we've got a kid 6'4", you know, 230, five-star, battling to be the number one player in the country coming in next year. And that's going to be interesting because Julian, you know, he's a true freshman. If he starts next year, he's still got a third year left. And then that means that kid's not starting until his third year. It's going to be really interesting next spring.
And you're discounting Aaron Noland again.
I know I am, but I'm just talking about what the expectations are out of camp.
Well, I mean, you know, he was wanted by a lot of programs as well. So I understand that too, but yeah, I think Julian's
there's that glass half full stuff, Dave, that Chad was talking about.
Yes.
We're going to have three starting quarterbacks next year.
Yes. Well, I do think, you know, Dan, you and I have hammered this out on our show a lot. I do think Julian, the way that Ryan Day stated that the number three quarterback needs to be ready to go into Michigan and be ready to play Michigan or whoever, you know, because the last time Ohio State won a natty, and Dave, you're well aware of this, it took us all three quarterbacks to do so. And that's what got blown out of proportion because that's saying that Julian would be the number three quarterback. And so that,
Yeah. Well, the way it was phrased is that somebody, you know, Ryan said that they were all in the mix. Right. Ryan is a politician at heart when he's at the podium. And he said everyone's in the mix. And then somebody followed up with a question 5 minutes later and they said, you know, you mentioned everybody's in the mix. What would it take for Julian to start? And he said, well, you know, he would have to be ready to go against Michigan and Oregon and Penn State. And everybody took Ryan said Julian needs to be ready against Michigan, Penn State, and Oregon, and, you know, that he's now all of a sudden in the mix to start. It just, you know, it's silly season. But, you know, expectations are high for the kid. He's really, really, really talented, and he's a lot more mobile than people give him credit for. When you look at high school film, he's definitely, you know, able to move.
Yep. And hit, like I said, the thing that makes him elite and the thing that made C.J. Stroud elite is his ball placement.
Yep. Accuracy.
And I have not seen that in a long time, even for a freshman. Even when CJ came in, he didn't have the layering ability that I've seen out of Julian Sain. And that's saying a lot, like, for me, because Dan, you know my love for CJ Stroud. So, like, that's saying a lot.
He just needs to get stronger.
Yep.
No, that's
but we're excited to have him. We are.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, thank
absolutely.
You.
Hey, thank Nick Saban.
We do what we can, right?
Hey, yeah. Speaking of Nick Saban, man, that guy's aging in reverse. Have you seen pictures of him lately?
Yeah,
retirement looks good on him.
He wears it. He wears it well. He really is, and he's you know, we have a bias. He's our guy, and we always will be, and so we root for him in everything we do. He's our national treasure.
Yeah.
I get not everyone else's, but hopefully, you know, hopefully no longer the head coach at Alabama, getting some separation from their, you know, sports fans who are supposed to hate him because of that, maybe they'll relax some of that and get, you know, I'd say, you know, sort of get to know him a little bit, get to appreciate him, as he does more things nationally, ESPN and such. And so that's personally my hope because, as the Alabama coach and the things that he did to be successful as the Alabama coach and maybe some of his media stuff, those were necessary. And I think even as Alabama fans, we're excited to see the other side of him because it was always reported like, oh, you get him in a different setting and he's hilarious and and he's funny and he laughs and he tells jokes and is this whole different persona. He was our coach for 17 years, and we saw glimpses of that, and we believed that it was there because so many people reported. But as fans, we didn't necessarily see a whole lot of it, and so we look forward to discovering this new version of Nick Saban, and we hope everyone appreciates him certainly in the way that we do. You mentioned
Absolutely.
Something there. Yeah, go ahead.
I can tell you, I sat in on one of his coaching clinic sessions probably about 12 years ago now, 13 years ago. And he was very charismatic, very engaging. You know, he was definitely, you can tell he's got a sense of humor. And you, like, you know, to your point, we're going to get to see that on the College Game Day set for sure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, funny enough, I ran into some of your brethren at a seafood market down here the other day, and I had my Ohio State shirt on, and this guy that was probably 6 inches taller than me, probably played O-line for you guys at some point in the past. He goes, "Roll Tide." And I think he thought I was like going to be offended or something. I just started talking to him, told him about our pod, showed him your Twitter page, told him about your podcast. But, you know, we chatted a little bit, and I can honestly see Saban, you know, heading up whatever becomes of the football, you know, mega, whatever it's going to turn into, right? If football separates from the NCAA, I can see him heading up and being like the commissioner of college football before his, you know, before his years are over.
No, that's true. You say commissioner, and so it's a Saban story for years. And I think after he had his hip replacement, it sort of faded. But for years, they would have a Friday noon basketball with the coaches, and he was always asked, "Well, does your team win?" And he said, "I'm the commissioner of the noon basketball league, so I pick the team. So yes, my team always wins." So would we say Nick Saban is commissioner? I agree with what you're saying, but my mind races to those to his stories about the Friday basketball.
I would like to, I'll interject one thing, Dave. I have nothing but respect for Nick Saban. I might have been frustrated by him and his ability to grow and develop players and win. But there was a moment a few years ago, and I think Alabama may have lost to Georgia in an SEC championship game. And they had Bryce Young and someone else at the podium. And they went to get up, and they had apologized for losing. And Nick Saban said, "No, sit back down." And he kind of went on like a 1 minute rant about what these men had been through and what they left on the field. Completely changed my thinking and line of thinking and perspective on not only him as a coach, but him as a man. And like, I've always thought he was like, he seemed like a very genuine person, but that's the moment I started to fully respect what Nick Saban was as a human being. And that changed my view on things. And so I think Kalen DeBoer is going to be a wonderful football coach. But you have to be a leader of men first. And that's what Nick Saban was. And I wanted it from an Ohio person, an Ohio podcast. And I have nothing but respect for that man.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate it. That was the other player was Will Anderson. And so that's certainly a team leader on the defense. And so you have the defensive captain, so to speak, and the offensive captain, true leaders on the team. And that was a moment of sort of that humanity that Saban has that you don't always see in a press conference. You don't always see in the moment. That was certainly a salient moment there. Let's talk about sort of the evolution of college football and you guys sort of in the center of, you know, the Big Ten are really going to be on the forefront of experiencing some of this. Let's start sort of broad, you know, sort of Big Ten, and we'll sort of bring home expectations to Ohio State. But, you know, Big Ten is a national conference now, literally, you know, coast to coast, which brings its own set of, you know, opportunities and maybe perils or pitfalls. What's sort of the mindset across the fan base, maybe even the conference base, with that type of expansion, that type of reach? What are some of the good and bad things that are anticipated as a result?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things for me, and this is, I'm just going to say interesting, and Dan, I'm going to let you do some of your take on this too, but the time zone and the travel, you know, for us and on the East Coast, I'm sure for you too, Dave, we're very used to the noon banger. Like noon bangers are like, we play, you know, Northwestern at noon or Bowling Green at noon. And, you know, but it, to go, let's say we're going to play UCLA, to put that at noon because of Fox's big noon, it would be 9 a.m. Pacific time. And so I think that's one of the challenges that we now face because you know, of who we've added. It's cool that it's regional, but Dave, I think Dan also has a really good perspective because he played hockey at Arizona. He graduated from Arizona. And so some of those Twilight games, Dan, I'll let you touch on it. You had a really good take on it the other day, but I do think travel, I think you could get into a real trap if you're Ohio State and you're going out and you're flying out 3 hours and you're playing at Washington and you're playing at 7 p.m. Pacific time. That's 10 p.m. here. I know they're college kids, but there's definitely something to be said about that. And it is a genuine concern I have, especially because we're traveling to Oregon this year.
Yeah. You pinpointed the biggest challenge, and it's the scheduling aspect of it, right? So, for instance, I feel 100% confident saying that there will never be a 12 Eastern kickoff for a West Coast game. There's no way that anybody's going to agree to kick off a game at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. Now, the Pac-12 did do that a little bit over the last few years to try to get some more national recognition, but it was always a second or third tier game that they did it with. But you know, we'll use the Oregon game as an example. Our fan base right now, I think they're still trying to get used to the time zone and, you know, when games are actually on TV. So for instance, big noon kickoff can't take that game, right? Because they're not going to start it at 9 o'clock in Oregon time. They're not going to kick a game off at 7 p.m. Oregon time and have that kick off at 9 or 10 o'clock Eastern. They're just not going to do it. The biggest TV markets are in the East, so they're going to want to capture those. So that game's going to have to either be a 3:30 game, or it's going to have to be, you know, a 7 Eastern, maybe 8 Eastern, which means a 5 or 6 o'clock start time on the West Coast. But I think that's going to be the biggest challenge is the scheduling aspect of it. And then you couple in the travel aspect of it. I'm really interested to see when our guys go out there for that Oregon game. Are they going to go out on Thursday? I mean, I hope they don't go out on Friday.
No, they're going to go on Thursday. I think they already talked about that, Dan.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the biggest aspect of it. As far as, you know, how is the fan base, you know, receiving those teams? I think that UCLA is more or less irrelevant right now. You know, they're now in the Big Ten. Washington, I think everybody recognizes that, you know, they have an up and down history and they've got a brand new coach and their roster was basically gutted. You know, USC, people are having fun watching them get commits and then decommits and making fun of them for not investing in their program. You know, the big one is Oregon. I mean, Oregon's going all in and they're doing everything they can. I mean, they got Dan Lanning. You know, they are killing it on the recruiting trail right now. You know, all reports are that Phil Knight's, you know, all in because he wants one before he dies. So they're the ones. Now, Oregon's interesting in the sense that, you know, they're acting like they've been there, done that. And their fan base is obnoxious. I'm just going to put it out there. Like they are acting like they are Bama coming into the Big Ten.
Yep.
I mean, they've done nothing. They've played in two national championships games in their history. And other than that, they've done absolutely nothing. The energy of Dan Lanning is what's carrying that. And then the dollar of Nike is what's carrying it right now. But I mean, you can't deny what they're doing on the recruiting trail, but they're going to have to put it together on the field because, you know, in Dan Lanning's 2 years, he lost to Utah twice his first season, as well as Washington his first season. He lost to Washington again twice last year. So every big game he's had as an Oregon coach, he's lost. Now they brought in some really impactful transfer players, or you would think impactful transfer players. So, you know, that game October 12th can't get here quick enough. Let's put it that way. But that's going to be one.
And yeah, they lost in the toughness realm of things. The line play. Oregon, when they lost to Utah, yeah, Utah punched them in the mouth. When they lost to us in the national championship, as soon as I watched three or four runs from Ezekiel Elliott, I basically kicked back with my popcorn and my pop and just settled in because I knew we were getting a natty that night. So despite Marcus Mariota and his and all of his efforts. So Oregon is 1-9 historically against Ohio State. And there's a reason for that. So they're coming into the Big Ten, and I think quite honestly, they have a giant target on them now because of the way that the things are being said and done. And so I would not want to be Dan Lanning this year.
Yeah. Now, and here's me playing, you know, devil's advocate to it. I think Dan Lanning, to his credit, recognized that as soon as he got there, and what he's done in the portal in these last couple classes and this class is, you know, this class coming up is really addressing that. I mean, they arguably have the two best tackles in all of college football, like the best tandem, right? The best pair of tackles. Their interior line is, you know, leaves a little bit to be desired. And then their defensive line is also a huge question mark.
Their defensive line is very light. It's very light, lean, fast, but light.
And then, you know, everybody's excited for Dillon Gabriel. I mean, the guy's like, he's like 5'4". I mean,
he's Deuce Knight playing quarterback.
But he's got some amazing numbers. So, you know, and in that offense, we'll see what happens. But they're, you know, I would say it's fair to say they got a target on their back.
Dave, I'm curious, from your perspective in the SEC, you know, with Bama and Georgia and those two elite powers. And so we're very used to Ohio State and Michigan and everybody else. And it's been Bama and Georgia and everybody else, you know, other than a couple years with Tebow in Florida. You know, how do you guys feel about Texas and Oklahoma? Like, are you feeling the same way we kind of are? I'm just curious. Like, I want to parrot this because, like, we're talking about Oregon, we're talking about Ohio State, but I'm very curious to know about your feelings on Texas. I had this plan to ask you last episode, and I didn't get to. So Texas and Oklahoma to some extent. Where are you guys feeling kind of like we are with the Texas thing? Because Texas, the Lambeau party and the, you know, the recruiting and the oil money, and, you know, where are you at with that?
Yeah, I think just one quick point on Lanning. I think he has really built the team that was set up to dominate the Pac-12, and so now he's got to shift gears, and, you know, we'll see where that goes. But I agree, that's probably the program with the target on its back.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
In terms of Texas and Oklahoma coming into the SEC, there's some excitement about it. But then it's sort of remaking how we do the conferences in terms of the we've sort of given way to the divisions East and West. And so that's something we're going to have to figure out. There was some thought that we'd go to like a four game or a four team sort of pod, almost sort of NFL like, and then sort of cross opponents across the pod. And we didn't quite do that. And so I think in terms of just the scheduling, probably the fans really don't know the model or you know what that structure is going to be. It's a lot more really good inventory of games, but there's a little bit of like, and I think there, you know, I see the parallels, right? It's the middle class in the conference that probably feels like, you know, the squeeze, the top teams in the conference, and you know, you guys and yours and Alabama and I and ours, we probably have a side eye like maybe welcome to this inner circle club, but maybe not. But the lower tier teams and the sort of the middle class, I feel like, you know, they're upset about it. The talk is that Texas is, you know, just as a program and just sort of their personality is really pompous and will, you know, try to sort of take over the conference as sort of the lead dog, maybe not even the best team, but sort of character wise. And so I think there's some side eye towards that. Oklahoma is probably more novelty and in fact, and sort of, you know, appreciating or being suspect. Texas is a little bit lead blocking for Oklahoma. Oklahoma might be an interesting ad. I don't want to say there's indifference in pockets of the conference. Tennessee, for example, where their coach, you know, played at Oklahoma, whether they think about Oklahoma quite a lot. We probably, Alabama fans probably think of them a little less, not lesser, but just think of them less. And it's more like, what the hell is Texas going to do then now that we're here? Now that they're here, we do like opening up. And look, we, you know, I say the conference as a whole, not just Alabama, but Alabama certainly was successful recruiting in Texas. So we think this probably opens it up a little more. But, you know, we had it there before. A&M hates it, and they still kind of roll around on we in an agreement that you would never have another team from the state of Texas. And, you know, I think we're two dead commissioners from that, you know, that agreement, and sort of the world has changed. But I think they still sort of rally around that. But I think I don't want to project too much onto Texas A&M, but I think the relative success that they've had, and aside from the money, right? But the success that they've had is we're the only SEC team in Texas. And so there's a lure to that. And so they got out of that what they could. And as soon as it, you know, the NIL, where their money can maybe make sway in the conference, and here comes Texas with more money, and now they can't say they're the only one. I think A&M really probably takes a backseat to this, and so I know that they're not pleased about it. But I think Georgia and Alabama, you know, it's more, you know, we've said, you know, Alabama fans have said, man, Texas or Georgia hasn't played a tough schedule in a while, and this will force them to, you know, maybe play some tougher games, and especially in the East with Tennessee down and Florida down, like where's their hard game? And and so now, you know, you can't dodge, you know, the LSU like they used to. You can't dodge, you know, Texas and Oklahoma. So they probably their schedule will sort of toughen up. But I think there's at the Alabama sort of Georgia level, I don't want to say indifference, but like I lean in the direction of like, this will be a novelty. This will be interesting to see. And then largely the footprint hasn't changed, right? We don't, you know, the South doesn't claim Texas and Texas doesn't claim the South, but there's a lot of sort of overlap there. Oklahoma, I don't know who claims Oklahoma in terms of region, but okay, we'll do that. You know, we took on Missouri pretty well enough. So, and so the footprint, at least it's adjoining states. And so I think we're sort of pleased with that outcome as well. So that's probably my two cents on it.
Okay. Can I ask?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Hey, so the A&M, can I jump in real quick? So the A&M thing's interesting because a couple points there. There's actually starting to be some smoke about them coming to the Big Ten because of this animosity that they were promised to be the only school in Texas in the SEC. So it's interesting. I've started to hear that over the last couple of weeks. The other thing that was interesting that you just said is, you know, you're kind of railing on Georgia's schedule a little bit. I thought that every team in the SEC could beat every team in the Big Ten, regardless of whatever. I mean, that's what I've heard for the last 19 years living in the South.
I don't know. I don't believe that. I don't know.
I'm just having some fun with you.
I think if you line them up, I think that there's a lot of reasonable conversations. But you know, everyone can beat anyone. I don't buy that. I give too much respect to you guys in Michigan and you know other programs to say that. I have a really great friend that's an A&M guy, and so maybe I'm hoping he doesn't listen to this one. But if A&M, they're mad, they're just mad, and so in their way, they're gonna throw a little bit of a fit about being mad. And so if that means they're talking about going to another conference, that's fine. I think the SEC is not going to be at a want for picking up another conference or picking up another team. So I think that's fine. I'll say this, in a couple of years, you guys will give them back to us. You guys would want them back. They are a unique bunch, and some of their traditions are well, they're unique. And
yes, they are.
Spend an hour on YouTube. I'll just stop.
Yeah. It was prevalent during the baseball tournament this year. It was really interesting. But you know, they kind of, I mean, what have they done?
They had John
Yandel. I don't understand why they're considered like this huge football program. And I don't want to rail on them, but it's kind of like the Oregon thing, right? Like at least Oregon's played in two national championships in the last 15 years. What has Texas A&M done?
Yeah, I mean, they can claim, you know, Manziel, and so they beat, you know, Alabama, I guess that one time. They beat us twice. It was the year, it wasn't Manziel, but it was more recently. I think they kicked a field goal down at Kyle Field. So they've beaten us twice. But yeah, what are they, and again, I'm not trying to necessarily bag on them, but, you know, they've beaten Alabama a couple times, which, I mean, we're not the only team in the conference, and so I'm not even trying to suggest that that's, you know, the big whoop of their experience. No pun intended with the whoop. But yeah, they've done that. I'm trying to think, what have they done? You know, they had the number one recruiting class, I guess, a couple of years ago, and then they claim right to the largest buyout in college football. So, you know, those are metrics.
Hey, now that's our new AD. who I gotta be honest with you, man, I'm everything I've heard so far, I'm a huge fan. And so I think there's two sides to every story with what happened with Jimbo.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, he's saying all the right things, and his ability to raise money is going to be huge for us.
Oh yeah. And I don't say that. It's you know, Jimbo was it was a bad contract, and it was the original contract was bad, and the extension was worse. And Jimbo's just not a guy you do that with. He had won a title at Florida State. And so you say, we've got to have somebody that's won a national title and that can compete and win and stuff like that. And I mean, he checked some of those boxes, and then there's the box that says, does he pass the litmus test to be given $100 million contract? And I mean, the answer is no for Jimbo and clearly so.
Yeah.
He's a unique character in sort of his own way, and some of the things that I've seen or read or heard. So he's a unique character in that way.
Well, Dave,
yeah, I think you guys have a good AD there, but you know, he had a bad day.
Yeah,
so I get this question a lot from friends and just in general on just conference expansion. And so there's murmurs about Florida State and Clemson. And do you feel like the SEC is looking to add any more, or are they going to take a breath with the current expansion where they are? So I think the Big Ten is always having conversations. I'll say that they're always having conversations, and I feel like we're heading towards the power two with the SEC and the Big Ten. Are you hearing that down in the Bama way, or do you think that this is the SEC is looking to add more teams, and then you end up with the four pods like you talked about?
I think the short answer is yes. I don't know that we're actively looking, more passively looking. Mm-hmm. We're not going to the grocery store to buy a gallon of milk. We're going to the mall to walk around a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, it's more like that. There probably is a short list taped to the bottom of someone's desk drawer. If we had to have two teams for next season or the next whatever time frame these things happen in, who do we call first? And I imagine there's a handful of teams. Clemson, Florida State are sort of at the top of that list in terms of, SEC fit. A lot of teams I hear a lot of voice pointed to, Virginia Tech, which is an interesting choice. Virginia might be an interesting choice. North Carolina, is an interesting choice. And so I think there's teams that sort of fit in that geographical landscape that we're looking for. And then you look at, what really, maybe even a Miami, and I even hate to say that, but, I saw yeah, all right. I can't remember who did it, but it was a comedian, and he was talking about, the different teams that, and it, does college football stuff. And he said, well, Georgia Tech, and the whole SEC looked at him and said, you've had your chance. So I don't know that we would pick them up again. But, the point is, I think there's teams that we would go to pretty quickly if we needed to sort of do a land grab. And what's interesting is, it's not necessarily new geography. Virginia would be a new state. And so that's why I kind of lean in that direction. North Carolina would be a new state. The trick with those is, could you take North Carolina and not North Carolina State? Would their state let them do that? Same with Virginia, Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know that that matters in a way that it used to matter, where states would sort of almost sort of mandate that. I think California did that with UCLA and USC at least at one point. So I think there's teams we'd go for. What's interesting is it doesn't, and again, I just say North Carolina and Virginia, but it doesn't radically expand the footprint. Even Florida State is not South Florida. Miami would bring in South Florida, but would we want, Miami? That's an interesting question. South Carolina is, Clemson doesn't bring in a new state, although, it might, media rights attached to it. And so what's interesting is it used to be media rights was a function of states, right? And now maybe it's a function of quality programs. And so that, yep, that might be interesting. But I don't know that we would look to let's go get Arizona and let's go get, because even if it's not, and I'm not picking on Arizona, but even if we think that, Arizona doesn't fit our profile, but it's a new market, it's a new sort of a new time zone that we get to, I don't know that we would do it for that reason. And so I think that we would stay reasonably within our existing footprint.
I understand that. Part of this, I think of to what it the impact of basketball, because if you think about the Big Ten picking up Maryland football, but Maryland basketball. So if you picked up North Carolina, what would that do to the Duke North Carolina rivalry? Things like that. So there's a lot to it. I was just curious because I don't know. There definitely seems Petiti definitely seems to be in an expansion mode for the Big Ten. I'll say it that way. Dan, I don't know about you, but it definitely feels that way right now.
Yeah, and I think the direction we're going in today, you made a really good point there, is that it used to be about markets and television grab and everything else like that. And now I think it's more about brand. I think the Big Ten proved that, right, with going out and getting four West Coast teams. I think the direction we're going is that football is going to separate from the NCAA. And I wouldn't be shocked if we didn't see the Pac-12 kind of be resuscitated. and you go back to conferences that are on more of a regional basis for all of the non-football sports. Basketball is the one wild card there, but basketball, like March Madness, is owned by the NCAA, whereas the college football playoff is not. So it's easy for football to separate, and it would be really, really hard for basketball too. And it's just too successful to really force that. But, you know, you start talking about all this private equity, you know, idea and everything else like that. It's, I mean, as much as football has changed in the last 5 years, I think it's going to change 5 to 10-fold more over the next 5.
I think so
too. It's just inevitable.
I think so too. I think it's almost like an earthquake, and the tremor stops, and so maybe the landslide is stopped, but it's like a tenuous piece, right? And you know, the last move, right, has crippled the pack, whatever number they can put next to it now. And so the teams that they've had to add and such, the pack too, right? So it's gone, right? Effectively, unless they just merge with the Mountain West, and then it's like, that's a different animal. Right. And so, you know, this last move has effectively, you know, killed one of the big five conferences. And so I think there's a little bit of like, ooh, that's probably not what we meant to do, but that's what consolidation is, right? The big department store that's never going out of business goes out of business as a result of that type of consolidation. So the next moves, you know, the ACC and in the Big 12, I mean, it does them under, right? And the next move, I think, takes them both down, right? Because if you guys expand again, then the SEC has to expand again, right? And so and that's not to say it's not going to happen. I just think, you know, hey, as these people look across the table at one another, I think there's just a tenuous piece. And it's not mean-spirited. It's just like, hey, let's maybe slow this down a little bit. There are contracts in play, and contracts can always be bought out. And all these things are fragilely holding together, loosely holding together what exists today. But yeah, in 5 years, it could be very different. But I think the next push is probably what pushes that together, because I think two conferences go down, or at least as we've always known them, I think two conferences go down, and then maybe the Pac, whatever, reinvents itself as a modern day version of the West Mountain West or whatever.
Mountain West,
and then the ACC reinvents itself as, you know, the modern day, I don't know, whatever it would be.
Big East.
All-American
Big Conference, East. It used to be the Big East.
Or something. Yeah. But it's the Big Two and like the three kids that they let hang around, like the three little brothers. And then it's, you know, whatever. All of that's coming. I think the ground has stopped shaking right now. Let's give this a little bit of a ride. But, you know.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This expansion playoff, it's you know, it's going to be interesting when we go to 12 teams and like two Sisters of Mercy get in just because they wear, you know, a conference banner for a conference that no one respects anymore, then, you know, and legitimate teams are not, you know, getting in. I'll pick on the SEC. If Ole Miss and Tennessee don't get in because some, you know,
BYU, you can use from Coastal, like, Carolina, pack, you can, you know, use Liberty.
So,
it's people think that it's going to be messy, man, come playoff time when that, you know, at large or that group of five team gets the automatic bid. I mean, when you look at the brackets that people are projecting right now, like that 5 seed looks really good. You know, assuming that the at-large, the group of five team is always the 12th seed, which in some cases in the past they wouldn't have been relegated to.
Coastal have been
12th.
Like the 9th seed, Dan?
Who's that?
Coastal Carolina a few years ago? Would they have been
I think they
9
been
or 11?
Higher.
I can't remember. But
yeah, they would have been ranked higher than 12th. I mean, obviously, Cincinnati made the 14 playoff, you know, coming out of the Conference USA or whatever they were in at that point. So, but, you know, for all intent and purposes, that 12th seed is probably going to be that group of five team playing the five seed. So the five seed gets the 12th seed, and then they get the lowest remaining of the top four in the next round. You know, it's not a bad spot to be in.
Right. I think when we think about expansion, that next round of expansion, I think sort of the dirty topic that, I mean, you know, killing off a conference probably makes some people feel bad. Maybe not. That next move, a very real topic, which I think is slowing some of the conversations down, is relegating teams out of one of the conferences. So I'm going to pick on Vanderbilt. It's an easy target. But at what point do you say we're going to add a team to replace Vanderbilt? And how do you do that? Do you pay them a certain amount of money every year just to go away? And I'm not going to pick on teams in the Big Ten, but you could name them, right? You know who would top the list, right? And so I think expansion comes, because I think the expansion is not just about more teams and more geography, but it's the brands. We've talked about it. We think it's more brands. It's more great inventory, right? As opposed to, well, everyone gets to play Vanderbilt. Well, yeah, but they're going to go 0 and, you know, whatever, or 1, depending upon who they play out of conference, right? And so that's not the inventory we want. We want more of the Oregon's and Wisconsin's and Washington, those, and Ohio State, you know, USC. And we want more of those games that have some cachet and some novelty to them. We don't want to see everyone beat up on, you know, again, I'll pick on Vanderbilt, but that's not what we want. So I think there, some of the move to expand will also include an element to contract.
You hit on something that I was actually just going to bring up. So I have my wish list, actually, that I want the Big Ten to go get, so we don't have to deal with the, I'm going to use Maryland. Maryland is the Vanderbilt for me. They always have like one or two five stars, and Mike Locksley is the coach, and he's terrible, and they end up winning like a couple games early in the season. People start talking about him, and then they go 5-7. So I understand what it does to the conferences, but I also want those brands. So you brought up one for me was North Carolina. I think North Carolina fits well in the Big Ten. I think regionally they fit well. You can be in Charlotte and from Columbus and, you know, by flight and, you know, under an hour. And maybe a little over an hour.
Did you hear that, David Sanders?
Yeah, that was also for David. Hey, David, I'll tag you in this, even though it goes against my rules. And then I like Utah a lot, because we brought in those teams from out west, and I like the brand and style of football they play, and they have a hardcore base. And then the interesting one you said that I was surprised by, you said Florida State. Florida State is on my wish list for the Big Ten. I want a Florida school, and they are on my wish list. I do not want Miami. You guys can have Miami. We'll trade you. You can have Miami. We'll take Florida State. And then just because I have family and my dad, like as a secondary team, was a big Va-Tech fan. You know, you guys can have Va-Tech, but we'll take West Virginia.
Very good.
How about that? We will decide. We will decide.
That's right. We should have a draft, right? We should have a draft of these other teams.
And, yeah. Yes. Okay. You know, so there are no more conferences, and the SEC and the Big Ten get to pick. We're just going to go hand pick things.
That's right.
Dan, we're in charge, and Dave's in charge of the SEC.
There we go. Let's do it. Hey, let's take it back to you guys, and let's talk about the 2024 season in the context of Ohio State. There's a lot of talk, and I imagine you guys are hearing more of it with your media outlets there. There's a lot of talk about national title or bust for Ohio State. Is that fair? Is that a fair level of expectations? What do you guys expect for the Buckeyes this season?
You want me to take that to start?
Yeah, I have an answer, but I'll let you answer first.
Yeah, so is this year natty or bust for us? Unequivocally, absolutely yes. And I say that based on what we've done with guys who have chosen to come back, the quality of the pickups that we got in the portal. I mean, we brought in six guys from the portal. Everybody acts like we went out and spent $1 billion in the portal. We brought in six guys that just, you know, the really high quality guys. You know, obviously with Ryan turning over the play calling to a guy like Chip Kelly. I think this year is a natty or bust. You're starting to hear guys on the team say it publicly. Now, does that mean that if we don't win the natty that Ryan Day should get fired? No, it doesn't. I think that's fandom speaking that Ryan Day is on the hot seat. You know, so I separate the two from natty or bust and Ryan Day fired if we don't get it. I mean, I think it's a natty or bust season in the sense that the table is set for us to win the national championship. And if we fall short of that, it will be a disappointment based on the roster that we have, the money that's been invested into it, and bringing over Chip Kelly.
Yeah. And so where I will take this back to is the 2015 season, Dave. So we win the Natty in 2014 with Cardale, Zeke, Bosa, all that crew. And then in 2015, we come back and we blow it. We blew it. That should have been a back-to-back national championship caliber type setup. And I look at this a lot like when we played Georgia in the Peach Bowl. Everybody knows that was the actual real national championship. It wasn't the Georgia and TCU game. So these guys are back. They're back and they're healthy. And is it fair? No. Is it real? Yes. So I will separate like Dan did. I don't know who you're going to go out and get if you fire Ryan Day because he gets to the national championship game and loses to Alabama. Like, I don't know who you go get that's going to be better than like what you have now, with the exception of like, I have like one guy, one phone call. And Dan and I did this on our show, but my one phone call would be to Kirby Smart.
Okay.
So Dan's got his own guys, but I'm just saying, like, yeah, you know, if you're looking at the coaches and
you got a little bit more of a realistic list.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, I'm a homer and we know this. But what I'm saying is I don't know who you go get that is better. And I give Ryan Day a little bit of, I don't know, breathing room, I guess, because like this is his first head coaching job. You know, Kirby, you know, same thing. He had to kind of figure it out along the way. And Ryan Day is figuring out along the way. And it, like, he brought in Jim Knowles to fix a problem. Now he brought in Chip Kelly to fix a problem because he couldn't do the offense and run the team. And so we're figuring it out. But is he on the hot seat? No. Is his seat warm? Probably a little bit. You lose to Michigan this year and you somehow figure out how not to get a national championship, things start to cook a little bit under the skillet.
Is there any of the fan base or you guys that think this is the team? The team is built for this year. We've even added some extra spice and ingredient. Like, we are ready. This is going to be fantastic when we see it on the field. And oh damn, it's a 12-team playoff. So we're ready for this season, and this is the first season that it's going to be that much harder to win it. Is there a little sort of juxtaposition on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's yeah. I mean, to have all that stuff line up in the same time, it's going to be a daunting task. It's going to be hard for anybody to win the national championship moving forward. Let's be clear about that. Anybody, you know. It's a grind. I mean, you're talking about, what is it? It takes four games in the playoff to win the Natty unless you're in the top four. It takes 3 to 4 games.
Yep.
I mean, that's 3 to 4 quality opponents in a row coming on the heels of a conference championship, which is going to be a quality opponent, coming on the heels of your rivalry game, which for most people is going to be a quality opponent. I mean, you're looking at a 6 to 7 week stretch at the end of the season that somebody needs to go on a run to win the title.
Yeah.
You know, now they can afford, they can afford a loss to their rival and or in the conference championship, still get into the playoff and make that run, but they're going to make it harder for themselves to do that. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, and that's why, you know, if things fall into place, it'll be that much more sweeter. That much more sweeter. Is that, that was unnecessary. It'll be that much sweeter.
You know, it reminds me, this is a way back machine, but it goes back to me in 92 and Gene Stallings. It was the first year that the SEC had a conference championship game. And so, you know, for all of our success that season, we got to go play Florida and Florida could have knocked us out of, you know, playing for a national title. And so, you know, Gene Stallings was definitely like, of course it has to be this year that we have to go do this extra thing that we're on the cusp of otherwise just being in the game. And then, so now we've got to go do this extra thing that, is designed to be very, very difficult. And fortunately that team went on and did that. You know, you guys talked a little bit about Ryan Day, you know, hot seat. And I agree with everything you said. It's interesting to think, you know, there's room for a little bit of frustration, but, you know, one kick goes through the upright, you know, against Georgia and there's, you know, there's no talk of this, right? So I get it from that perspective. I do want to talk about Chip Kelly. You guys have brought in him as your offensive coordinator, so I want to go there. But there was an interlude where you guys had Bill O'Brien. There was about a three-week session, sort of January, February. Alabama fans have an opinion on Bill O'Brien. What was the Ohio State fan base opinion on O'Brien when he came? And was there for a minute, and then when he departed, there's probably a lot of emotion in a 3 week, 4 week period there. But what was Buckeyes? What were you guys thinking?
I'll make my answer very short. And Dan knows this. I had to talk myself into Bill O'Brien. I did not want Bill O'Brien. It's like if you go back and look at my Twitter, I was like, no, absolutely not. Please no. Please God no. No no no. And I kind of had to talk myself into him. So, and basically by saying he was good enough for Belichick, he was good enough for Saban, he's good enough for us. And that was kind of like where I left it. And Dan, I'll hand it over to you there because I could go on a whole rant about Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. I think the fan base was probably mixed at first. And then a lot of folks talked themselves into really, really liking it. I liked it immediately. All my Bama buddies, you know, reached out to me and told me, good God, you guys are going to hate him. I mean, they did not like him at all. And I'm like, well, you know, he's Tom Brady speaks highly of him. Bryce Young speaks highly of him. Bill Belichick and Nick Saban liked him. Like, I'm going to go with those guys over your opinion. Because you didn't, you know, just because you didn't win a natty for the fifth time in a row with them. but I mean, I was excited for it. Here's what I was excited about for Bill O'Brien is that we were going to have an adult in the room. And the one knock on Ryan, you know, early in his career, and he fixed this on the defensive side of the ball, but on the offensive side of the ball, he still, you know, hadn't given up any control. And Bill O'Brien wasn't gonna, you know, kowtow to Ryan Day. So I really liked that aspect of it. I, of course, was really worried when the rumors started going about him leaving and everything else like that. I understood why he left. It's hard to argue and tell somebody they made the wrong choice when it comes to family. I did kind of question, like, okay, well, where's his son been all these other years that he's been gone? Like, what's the real difference now? But then obviously the way it's turned out, man, we couldn't be happier. I mean, Chip Kelly is just, that's winning the lottery when it comes to an offensive mind. And the relationship that he's got there with Ryan makes it even better. I think Ryan lets go that much quicker because it's Chip Kelly.
Talk about that, about the expectations under Chip Kelly. You know, everyone sort of, you know, has flashbacks to what he did in Oregon. And certainly his his offense has evolved over the years. But is there an expectation that you guys are going to or play faster or just look different than what maybe people expect from an Ohio State fan? What are you hearing and seeing? Maybe spring, maybe what you hear out of summer workouts.
I have not heard anything that parallels what you saw at Oregon with that sort of a tempo. I do believe we're going to play with tempo more than we have in the past. I think our run scheme is going to be, I think his biggest impact that he's going to have on this team is the run scheme, both up front and just with the creativity, but most importantly up front. Because if there's an area of concern that we have right now, it's twofold. It's the right side of the offensive line, which I think Josh Freier gets. I think he's better than people give him credit for, and I think he's going to take another step this year. But that right guard position is a concern for us. And then the uncertainty at the quarterback position. Like, can Will Howard, if he's the guy, like everybody's assuming he is, can he throw downfield to win a game? Or if it's Devin Brown, can he stay healthy? So those are the two biggest question marks. But I think Chip's mind and his, let's put it this way. I've heard that some of this run scheme stuff that they're doing in practice so far, just in the 15 practices of spring, were just a complete 180 to some of the stuff we were doing. Like, it's really, really creative. Not gadgety, it's just creative. And Chip Kelly, he's a run first guy.
Yes, he is.
You know, and I think that's going to be huge with us with the backfield that we have, which just got a little bit lighter. We lost a guy, our fifth guy to the year with an ACL. So we've really only got four running backs in that room, which is a little scary. But I mean, we're ecstatic with Chip coming on board.
Yeah,
And yes, it heightens the expectations
it does.
tenfold, twentyfold.
So Dan and I were at the spring game together, and the very first play of the spring game, and I'm like elbowing Dan behind me because they came out in a wing T, and that was everything I needed to know about Chip Kelly's run, like what he was going to do with the run game. Like, we know he likes to pull. We know that he likes pulling guards. We know that he'll crash block with a wide receiver. Like, so but yeah, everything we've heard is Chip Kelly's innovation. And just like, he doesn't have to be a head coach. He's not a head ball coach now. All he has to do is sit around and figure out what he's going to do on third and two at the opponent's 20-yard line with 4 minutes left to go in the game. Ryan Day doesn't have to do that anymore. That's what Chip Kelly does. And I was ecstatic when we got Chip Kelly. I was so glad that Bob left. And there was a part of the fan base that was like, that's fandom. Fan is short for fanatic. But I had to talk myself into Bill O'Brien. Did not have to talk myself into Chip Kelly. So.
Very nice, very nice. Hey, I know the clock's running out on us here, so I save. Hey, look, I probably saved our most important question to last. It's been fun talking football, but I have to ask, what's the best juice coming out of Columbus? Watershed, Middle West, Whiskey War? Is there something I'm not thinking about?
Dan did a poll,
I
and
did do a poll.
and actually, my brother, I'm going to give you a shout out, Ryan. He has a Instagram and does tastings. It's Whiskey with Ryan, and he has Japanese whiskey, he has all these fancy whiskeys. So I did message him, and so he did come back to me with that he hears a lot about Watershed, but he said that he hadn't at least tasted it yet. So I but shout out to him too, because he does have, like, he'll do it for corporations. He'll take
Nice.
different, like, nice whiskeys and like go do after hours events, like on this. That's like a side hustle of his. But Dan, off to
In
you, man.
the poll that we did, Whiskey War doubled up the other two combined.
Really?
Okay.
Yep. 58%, 25% for Watershed, and 17% for Middle West. Now, I can't necessarily say that this was a scientific poll, as we only got 12 votes, but it
I
looks
should
like
have retweeted that for you.
seven people felt strongly that Whiskey War was the drink of choice in that one.
Now, I've been to Whiskey War. I've had dinner. They have a nice restaurant. It's a phenomenal burger that they do there. The whiskey, I think, is pretty good. I did a flight and then I picked up a bottle of their double oak and their regular bourbon. I think it's really good. I do enjoy it. And I like, they have a video, sort of the story of how they got started. And then when COVID, came through and sort of messed up their plans, it's an incredible video. And so they're certainly an organization I root for. I probably put them in the middle of those three. I've had the Watershed and maybe I've just had some of their lower end stuff. It was okay. I didn't care for it as much. Although I hear, and I haven't been to Watershed, but I hear that their restaurant facility is off the charts good. So I do want to give them another look. And then I went to Middle West, but they weren't open. We went at it was noon, and so we sampled some of their stuff. And then I have a couple of sort of bourbon group bottle selections from Middle West, and it's a little bit of an acquired taste, but they have a pumpernickel rye that is legitimately really, really good. So I've got Middle West, and then their restaurant facility. All we could do was look at it, but their restaurant and bar facility looked phenomenal. And so I can't wait to an opportunity to get back up to Columbus and experience all three of those again in sort of their fullness. But yeah, I like the Middle West, the water, and then I want to spend some more time with Watershed. Are there others? Because that's three really good distilleries producing a lot of good juice just right there in Columbus. I don't think of or haven't thought of Columbus as sort of a whiskey town, but man, look at the stuff coming out of it. Are there other brands that maybe we need to look at as well?
Dad, did your brother know?
I
I'm
could
in
ask
Nash I'm
him.
in Nashville, so
Yeah, I can ask him. Yeah, certainly, and message you, Dave, offline. But I mean, you could always stop by Urban's Pine House, and see all the national championship things. And then there's a nice poster like off to the right when you walk in. And there's and like all and I'm joking a little bit, Dave, but it's Ezekiel Elliott, and it just says 85 yards on it. I don't know if that rings a bell or not, but
Through the heart of the South.
yeah.
No,
I'm just
I
teasing.
understand. I
There is a
understand.
poster of that, but.
The laugh that I have, and this might be more of an inside joke to some of our folks, but my fear in going in there is I might have my oil checked. So,
All fair enough.
hey
Yeah.
guys, this has been phenomenal. I love chatting it up with you guys. Hey, we've got some of our guys going to the Alabama Vanderbilt game, so Dan, I'll reach out to you when we're in Nashville, and hey, maybe we grab a cocktail or something together. That'd be a lot of fun. I
That'd be
do hope.
great.
I have a legitimate hope that we get to do this as a pregame conversation. It'd have to be in the playoffs, but
That'd be
I
fantastic.
Oh,
hope
I'd
that
love it,
that
man. How
opportunity
fun would that
exists.
be?
So we'll put that we'll speak that out there. As we wrap up, where can our folks find you? You guys have a lot of great inside conversation here on Ohio State. A lot of great football opinions. Where can our guys find you?
Yeah, so we're on Twitter at so my handle's there, but our Twitter is at TBDITL, so at the best damn pod in the land. And then we're on YouTube, so we have our YouTube channel, same thing, best damn pod in the land. And then I've recently we only have a few followers, but I've been pushing to Spotify, and I've had some requests to go to Apple Podcasts, but I have to get approved.
Okay.
So I should say we have to get approved, but yeah, so we're a little bit of everywhere. We're Twitter, primarily Twitter and YouTube, and then we do have a Facebook and Instagram. Dan does a phenomenal job on Instagram. I have to shout out Dan. Like, he is like the Instagram guru. I don't understand it. My wife taught me how to use it. That is not a joke. I'm an Xennial. I don't understand Instagram, but Dan, like, what's your Instagram handle? And like, he always puts our pods up and like the links and all
Yeah,
the music and
my Instagram and Twitter are both the same. It's at Ice Shark 8 is where you can find me on those two platforms. I usually tag our pod and everything that we do, so
yeah.
you can always
Dan
find
does
it through
it.
there as
Like,
well.
I really have to prop him up though, Dave. Like, he's got the graphic and the music and.
I have some fun with it, man. I have fun with the music selection. It's something I get judged on by my 15-year-old daughter when I post, so
Yeah.
she inspires me to keep it current and real.
We all have those struggles. So I feel you on that one.
Stay strong.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. It's been a phenomenal conversation, and wish you guys an appropriate amount of luck this season, and certainly rooting for some former Bama players that are going to spend some time there in Columbus. Thank you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
good luck
thank
to the
you.
Crimson Tide this year too. I'm excited to see how the board does. I really, really, really like him.
Yep, same. I have a lot of respect for DeBoer. Yep.
And we're back. What a great conversation. Hopefully you enjoyed listening as much as I did participating. A couple of good fellas. And hey, look, they're Ohio State fans, but that's okay. I certainly hope, as we indicated there towards the close, that we get to talk to them again, because that means we're doing an in-season preview leading up to a playoff game. And I imagine that would maybe be a second round game. So we're certainly rooting for that to be in the Tide's future. Give us a look, give us a listen, give us a review. Hopefully, if you enjoy these interviews, we've got quite a number of them lined up for the season, our opponents. So give us a 5-star if you like that content. Drop us a message. You know how to reach us, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. And we're on the interwebs and such, and certainly we love the 5-star reviews on the iTunes or your listening sort of platform, and we'll get in the hobby, you get in the habit back of sort of reading those out and calling out the call outs, if you will. So hopefully look forward to hearing and participating with more of you in that forum. That's it for today. Roll Tide, and we look forward to the season just around the corner. We'll get out some preseason shows, and like we said, a lot of good content coming up for this exciting new season. Have a great day. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course, Roll Tide.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat. Literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over 1 million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.